Welcome to another broadcast of Celebrating Truth with Dr. E. Fay Williams, Esquire, on the Artist First Radio Network. Dr. Williams currently serves as National Chair of the National Congress of Black Women and President of Natural Health Options. All past shows can be downloaded free on demand. Visit the archives for Dr. Williams and Celebrating Truth at artistfirst.com. And now, here's your host, Dr. Williams.
Thank you so much, Tony. Hello, I'm Fay Williams, your host, and welcome to Celebrating Truth. We've got two wonderful guests coming up in this hour. Every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring to you great personalities and information you don't often hear on mainstream media, but you do hear about that on Celebrating Truth. We're just wrapping up the National Congress of Black Women, where we had a wonderful luncheon on yesterday. We had great guests, great talent, and in our last half hour, we're going to be talking about that brunch. It was held here in Washington, D.C. Celebrating Truth is brought to you by the National Congress of Black Women, the number one organization dedicated especially to the needs of black women and their families. And as always, we're delighted to bring Celebrating Truth to you every week. Check out our website at www.nationalcongressbw.org. That's www.nationalcongressbw.org. You will find great photos there of First Lady Michelle Obama, who spoke with us at the National Congress of Black Women's brunch on yesterday. And, of course, you'll find photos there of Sojourner Truth. As you know, one of the First Lady's first official acts was unveiling a memorial to Sojourner Truth for us, making Sojourner Truth the first African-American woman to be honored with a permanent memorial in the United States Capitol. And this past weekend, we had loads of people stopping in at the Capitol to see Sojourner Truth. And when you come to Washington, D.C., stop by the Capitol Visitor Center and see Sojourner there. She stands in Emancipation Hall in all of her glory, along with others who've been in civil and human rights. You will also find details on many of the things that we do in the National Congress of Black Women. Yeah, we invite you to join us. You can purchase your membership online, and as always, it's going to be wonderful, wonderful having you as a member or having you as a donor. Yes, we do celebrate women and all of their achievements. And at our awards brunch just yesterday, we celebrated the works of men and young people who are making life better for all of us in our communities. Yeah, we invite you to support our efforts by being a member or by going to our website at nationalcongressbw.org, where you can donate to our various projects. We have several wonderful projects that we'll be telling you about throughout the program, but some of the key ones are College for Kids, 9 to 12-year-olds, College for Teens, 13 and up, and Young Ambassadors. We have youth groups. We have young college groups. We have those for the rest of us. The National Congress of Black Women is about doing what is necessary to make our community better. We are women making a difference. There are a lot of awesome things that you're going to find going on in our community, and we have to celebrate our own truth because we either get left behind or we tell our story ourselves. So often in mainstream media, black women are either left out or denigrated, and I'm sure you will agree that our great stories are not always told there. So we hear well the African proverb that tells us, until the lions begin to tell their story, tales of hunting will always glorify the hunter. So if we want to glorify ourselves and keep up with what we're doing across this country, then we must tell those stories. We encourage you who are listening to tell your story on Celebrating Truth, because nobody can tell your story better than you can. So let us know if you have a story you want to tell here on Celebrating Truth. Call us at 202-678-6788 between noon and 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Or you can just email us at info@nationalcongressbw.org. That's info@nationalcongressbw.org. And we'll be happy to help you tell your story. Our first guest today is L.Y. Marlowe, and we're happy to have you. Hello, how are you, my sister?
Hello, thank you for having me, Dr. Williams.
Wonderful. You missed a great brunch on yesterday, so you might want to plan to be there the next time we have one.
I will definitely do that.
Okay, today our guest is L.Y. Marlowe. She's the award-winning author of Color Me Butterfly, a poignant and endearing true story about four generations of mothers and daughters who suffered and survived 60-plus years of domestic violence and abuse. The true story of her grandmother, her mother, herself, and her daughter. Color Me Butterfly has won an unprecedented 8 awards, including the most prestigious literary award, the National Best Books Award, and has attracted the attention of mass media stellar reviews, book clubs, and readers alike. But the story does not end there. In the fall of 2007, Ms. Marlowe discovered that her 22-year-old daughter was trapped in an abusive relationship, one in which the abuser not only tried to kill her daughter twice, but threatened the life of their baby girl named Promise. When the system failed to protect Ms. Marlowe's daughter and granddaughter, she decided to turn her pain into what we're going to talk about this afternoon or this evening. She founded Saving Promise, a national grassroots domestic violence nonprofit to strengthen domestic violence as a national priority in the same way as breast cancer awareness. In her role as domestic violence advocate and keynote speaker, what has been most inspiring is Ms. Marlowe's story and timely message. Ms. Marlowe has appeared on local, regional, and national television, and radio has been featured in various magazines, too. For her untiring work, Ms. Marlowe was also awarded an award by one of the highest elected officials, the Governor's Award. And she wants to invite you to visit her website at savingpromisecampaign.org or visit www.colormebutterfly.com to learn more about Ms. Marlowe. Color Me Butterfly and Saving Promise. And I know this is going to be an interesting discussion because it seems that domestic violence is so prevalent in our community, and what a tragedy that is, what a waste of energy and life. So let's meet our sister now. Hello, how are you, Ms. Marlowe?
And I'm doing very well, thank you.
Wonderful. So tell us just a little bit about your book, Color Me Butterfly.
Color Me Butterfly is the true and unnerving story of four generations of women in my family, my grandmother, my mother, myself, and my daughter, who suffered and survived over 60-plus years of domestic violence and abuse. And that book would start in the early 1940s, where my grandfather horrifically abused my grandmother and her 8 children, and how that abuse transcends down through the next 3 generations, from my grandmother to my mother's generation, then into my generation, and then finally my daughter's. The book would end at my daughter's generation, and Promise story would come later in terms of what incited me and inspired me to found Saving Promise.
Well, now, how old was your daughter when you found out that she was also being abused?
She was 22 years old when I discovered that she was involved in a relationship with this person. As you mentioned, Dr. Williams not only tried to kill her once, but twice. And the second time he tried to kill her, he would strangle her while then their baby girl named Promise, 6 months at the time, lay on the bed beside her.
Well, you know, that's something I can relate to. A number of years ago, I, like many women, found myself in an abusive relationship and almost was killed, but I was blessed to be able to survive and to talk and work with many women who are involved in abusive relationships and try to get them to understand it doesn't usually get any better. So what led you to write the book, though, about it? What did you hope to accomplish by writing the book?
Well, interestingly enough, most would probably think that I suddenly had an epiphany to write this tell-all story about the women in my family, but as much as I would like to claim that, and it sounds like it would be the right thing to do, that really wasn't what incited me to write Color Me Butterfly. I wrote Color Me Butterfly after a health crisis. I had discovered a lump in my breast, and it would be that lump that ultimately would incite me to and inspire me to pursue my passion. and my passion at the time was writing. So after I was told by my writing instructor to write what I know, and what do we all know, our families, I would go on to write Color Me Butterfly after hearing since I was a little girl about the story of how horrifically my grandfather abused my grandmother and her 8 children, and then how later my father abused my mother, and certainly I was inspired by my own story and later my daughter's. And so that would be what really inspired me to write Color Me Butterfly. Saving Promise and some of the work that I'm now doing in domestic violence would not even come until after the book was published.
Well, let's go back to Color Me Butterfly. Explain to us exactly how that name came about. What's the meaning of Color Me Butterfly?
When I had finished writing Color Me Butterfly, the original title of that book was going to be In My Shadow, but as horrific as the stories were about my family and the women in my family, I did not want this book to represent that because I felt the women in my family, particularly my mother and my grandmother, were very courageous, strong women. And so I wanted something, the title to represent something about courage and hope and strength. And so I would later go online and Google those terms, courage and hope and strength, and lo and behold, a butterfly would pop up. And when I learned about the butterfly and that it goes through 4 stages of metamorphosis, and given what it meant to my family with 4 generations of women, I felt that a more appropriate title would be something relative to the butterfly, and I would found and decide to name the book Color Me Butterfly.
Well, now, this abuse, was it verbal or physical? Sometimes people think in terms of only physical abuse, but what was this in your 4 generations? What did it turn out to be?
In the 4 generations, it turned out to be every type of abuse imaginable, from physical to emotional to verbal, psychological, sexual. So in those 4 generations, across those different women, each of them experienced some level or all of those types of abuses.
Now, let's go to, you started to tell us about Saving Promise. Tell us about that.
Well, Saving Promise, as I said, was inspired by my granddaughter named Promise. After I got my daughter and Promise out of that horrific abusive situation, I felt like I needed to do something, not only to end the cycle in my family, but help it in other families as well, because I encountered a very challenging process from the system to the court system all the way down to even some of the services that were available. And I was concerned and disconcerted that the domestic violence did not have the type of exposure and social consciousness that exists for other issues that predominantly affect women. So I would go on and found Saving Promise with the auspices and a strategy to be the first of its kind domestic violence awareness branded organization that's positioned to have the same impact that's been so successful for breast cancer awareness. I think that the Susan G. Komen, for example, for the Cure organization has done a phenomenal job of making sure that everyone understands the urgency and the prevalence of breast cancer. And I wanted to see that same kind of urgency and prevalence exist for domestic violence.
Well, you know, so often women are killed in these domestic violence situations. What about your family members? Have all of them survived the abuse? Just tell us a little bit about how some of them handled the abuse.
I'm so pleased to report that all of the women in my family, from my grandmother to my mother, myself, and my daughter, we all survived. Even my daughter survived the strangulation because she would tell the story later that as he was strangling her and she was blacking out, she heard Promise screaming, and she thought that now he was strangling Promise, and she would fight for her life to save Promise's life. And ultimately, it would be Promise's screams that saved them both. But it would be the stories of my grandmother and my mother that encounter some of the most heartbreaking and horrific abuse. I would, write in Color Me Butterfly a story about my mother who once lay in a Philadelphia hospital with stitches from the top of her neck down through to her navel, and both lungs burst, and she was only 23 at the time and told to kiss her children goodbye. She had 5 children by then, because the doctors had told her that she would not live through the night because of the terrible beatings that my father had given her. So it would be through faith and perseverance that all the women in my family survived those type of horrific, abusive situations, including myself, who once had a gun held to my own head. So I'm so pleased to know that we survived it and that I'm able to use that and use that terrible, horrific experiences in my family to bring about real change.
Well, now, four generations of, I assume this is men abusing women, am I correct?
Yes, it is.
What is it that you can see that maybe the men had in common and that maybe we women miss those signals in terms of what or how men will treat us? Can you think of anything that these men had in common?
Well, I can speak to the men in my family, though it doesn't necessarily suggest that this is similar in other situations. But
in the situation of your family, what do you see?
Sure. I think the one common thing that existed in my family is all the men came from abusive or unstable situations. For example, in the story of my grandmother, where my grandfather abused her, my grandfather was very abused as a child, but it wasn't his father that abused him, it was his mother. And then later, my father came from an abusive situation as well, and all of them also had, problems with drug and alcohol as well. But I think what's interesting about this is not so often as much as what was common with the men in my family, but what were we as women, because all four of these men came from different walks of life, different families. They didn't know each other. Mm-hmm. So what was it about the women in my family, from my grandmother to my mother to myself and later my daughter, mm-hmm. that would encourage us or say it was okay to get involved in these kind of situations? And Dr. Williams, I would be honest to say to you that I would not come to understand that until much later in my life. And what I've come to understand is that the one thing that led all of these generational women in my family to the same fate is silence. My grandmother didn't talk to my mother about it. My mother didn't talk to me about it. And quite frankly, I'm not ashamed to say now that I did not talk to my daughter, not in the way that I needed to talk to her, until Promise screamed.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that I always advise women to do. If there's any sign of violence or threats of violence, you need to talk about it, because people will sometimes then later, if something does happen where you're abused, they won't believe you, because they'll say, oh no, that not that nice man, or if it's in the case of a woman, not that nice woman. They can't believe these things are happening because you've never talked about it before. You didn't share it with anybody until it gets to the place where you absolutely must share it. Maybe it's something public happens, and then people know. So I just advise women, and I don't know whether you do that too, to talk about it, and of course to consider that it really doesn't get better when someone is an abuser with no therapy, with nothing changing other than just the promise that I'll never do this again, I'm sorry. That's what we usually hear. It just does not change. Have you found that to be true, too, with the women in your family and how they were abused?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you hit it right on the nail there in terms of us as a society, and particularly women, need to learn to talk about it. In fact, one of the first national signature campaigns that Saving Promise is looking to launch is a campaign entitled Gotta Talk About It, because the first step to ending this pandemic that exists in our society, in our culture, in our communities, is the silence. We don't talk about it in our homes. We don't talk about it in our families. We don't talk about it in our communities. We don't talk about it with our friends. And so I think the first step is breaking the silence and letting people know that it is okay to talk about it, because if you don't talk about it, it does not get any better. In fact, it gets worse, because now not only are you living in this very abusive situation, but you're living it with it in silence and in isolation.
And, many times I find what women will do is make excuses for their abuser, they'll say things like, oh, well, it was my fault. Oh, I shouldn't have done this, or I shouldn't have done that. Did you find in your family that sometimes that was it? They covered up for the man who was abusing them, or they, you know, tried to keep it a secret because they didn't want their friends to know about it? Or just how would you describe the women in terms of what they did or said? Did they do anything to get out of the situation before it was critical?
Well, interestingly enough, and this is how this type of silence can transcend down into the next generation. Even though my grandmother was very abused by my grandfather, and he not only abused her, but her eight children as well, later on when my mother would marry my father, and the first time my father would beat my mother, she would run home to her mother, and she would say to my grandmother, you know, try to get help to stop this from happening to her. And my grandmother would say to her, go back to your husband, that's your husband.
Mm-hmm.
So that attitude, that mentality passed down. And my mother would go back to my husband because, to her husband rather, because in that day and time, especially when you're talking about in the 60s and 70s, you know, women didn't have a voice like they have today.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't the breadwinners. We weren't the head of our households as many of us are today. So we didn't have the power
often
to protect ourselves.
Often didn't have the resources either to move away from home and perhaps used that as a reason for going back. As you said, many women perhaps didn't have jobs then, didn't know what they would do. If they had children already, what would they do? And so they chose to stay. And then every time I hear someone who says, I stayed in the marriage because of my children, I remind them that abusive relationships are just devastating to the children, many of whom would prefer that you separate, that you call it quits, than to constantly have to witness the abuse of a mother, or in the case of if it happens to be the father, which is rare, that abuse they would prefer. Is that what you have found?
I certainly have found that. In fact, I think your point is well taken in that we as women oftentimes we think that, you know, we are saving our children or we are making a better life for our children by staying, because at least they're growing up in the home with two parents, at least they're growing up in the home, period, with a roof over the head and food, because many women can't survive financially on their own. But what I would tell them is that those temporary things can be resolved in terms of finding another place, finding a way to rebuild your life. What cannot be resolved later is the exposure that you're given to this child to be exposed to these behaviors that is teaching that child that it is okay to behave in that way and treat someone like that or to be treated in that way. And that's a issue that we cannot resolve later, even if we decide to stay in a relationship and protect that child in that other way.
Now, all the four women you talk about in the book, Color Me Butterfly, are they still living? And if so, do they participate in Saving Promise, or how do they feel about it?
Well, all of the women were nothing short of supportive to Color Me Butterfly and my work as with Saving Promise. My grandmother passed before the book published, and my mother, I lost her about a year ago. And Color Me Butterfly came out several years back, and Saving Promise was launched almost 4 years ago. So I was so pleased that I did get the blessing from my mother and my daughter, and prayed to my grandmother and feel that I have her blessing as well, because I know in my heart and in what my family went through, that the legacy in my family needs to be used for change and needs to be used to do something different to not only break the cycle in our family, but to help other families as well.
For those of you who are just joining us, this is Celebrating Truth, and we're talking about, with L.Y. Marlowe, who has a book, and it has to do with domestic violence and how we end it. And, of course, she's encouraging us to talk about it if we find this situation in our families or if it happens to us. Now, you speak all over the country about intergenerational abuse, attitudes and abusive behaviors that pass from one generation to the next. How does Saving Promise assist in breaking this destructive cycle?
Well, I personally believe that anything great in our society starts with what we pass down to our children. And the three components of saving promise, specifically as it relates to our children, are first and foremost protecting our children. And then secondly, educating our children and our families and our communities about healthy relationships. And then finally, counseling and healing those who are in domestic violence situations. It doesn't matter what age you are, being willing to open yourself up to a new way of being free and breaking destructive patterns and cycles in your family or your community is the first step to anything. And that's exactly what Saving Promise focus is. Is our difference is really looking at more progressive ways and more proactive rather than reactive models to really change the fate of domestic violence and to work collaboratively with all the wonderful advocates and other organizations and groups that are out there on the front lines trying to make a difference as well, to really bring domestic violence out of the shadows and into the light so that we can be even more effective in ending this pandemic.
Now, how can our listeners get involved in either Saving Promise or similar groups, or are you open to helping people get their own organization started to end this scourge of domestic violence?
Well, there's a number of things that people can do, particularly as it relates to Saving Promise and, more importantly, as it relates to domestic violence. First, contact us at Saving Promise. Visit our website at www.savingpromise.org. Learn about what we're doing, and look at ways that you might want to partner with us. If you're an organization, if you are a group, an individual, and you want to make a difference, contact us so that we could talk to you about ways that you can do that as well. One of the other initiatives that we are asking people to do is to sign our One Voice petition on our website. We are trying to collect 100,000 signatures, for example, to really get people involved and to be able to take those signatures to Congress, for example, and ask and appeal to Congress to make a greater difference when it comes to domestic violence awareness. And then finally, support our organization. I think Saving Promise, we have a very strategic model that we want to put forth, that we really want to make a difference, from, you know, additional research to building coalitions and culture-building awareness programs and prevention programs and empowerment campaigns. Support our organization. Learn about our organization. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And more importantly, donate to Saving Promise or any organization. Domestic Violence Awareness Month is the month of October. And this is the month that we celebrate the work that everyone is doing and also learn about domestic violence awareness. So I would encourage you to take the first step by getting to know Saving Promise.
And of course, Vice President Joe Biden has, sponsored the Violence Against Women Act. I think we just celebrated an anniversary of that, so I would suggest that people also go online and look up the Violence Against Women Act, and you perhaps can get some suggestions there, some ideas on what you can do so that we can end domestic violence in our lifetime. Would you give your web address one more time before we go?
Sure. That address again is www.savingpromise.org. That's www.savingpromise.org.
And thank you so much, L.Y. Marlowe. And, of course, give the name of your book again.
The book is Color Me Butterfly, and they can learn about that at colormebutterfly.com.
All right. I want to thank you so much for sharing your story with us today, and I know our listeners are looking forward to reading your book, learning more about the ideas that you give on our Ending Domestic Violence. I want to thank you again so much for joining us on Celebrating Truth.
Thank you.
And to our listeners, we encourage you and all of your friends to please join the National Congress of Black Women. As members of the National Congress of Black Women, you'll find that there are many ways in which you can serve your community as a group. When you look around your community and you think about community service at its best, we want you to think that's the National Congress of Black Women, because we are women who are making a difference. So join us by calling us during the hours of noon and 4 p.m. Monday through Friday at 202-678-6788 or going to our website at www.nationalcongressbw.org and clicking on membership. Follow the instructions. Give us a call if you need assistance with joining the organization. Just yesterday, we had a wonderful brunch. We had about 650 people in attendance, and we heard a wonderful message from our First Lady, Michelle Obama. Again, I want to thank you, Ms. Marlowe, and we look forward to working with you and you're working with us because we absolutely must end domestic violence. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back with Tony Wilson, known as the Young James Brown.
Now back to Celebrating Truth.
Thank you so much, Corey. You're listening to Celebrating Truth, presented to you by the National Congress of Black Women. And, of course, we are all on a high right now, and it's a natural high because we're just coming out of our 27th annual brunch where we had a great time. On the phone with us are two people who attended that brunch, Tony Wilson and Wanda Williams. How are you today?
Great.
Wonderful.
And what do you think about the... Well, first of all, Tony is known as Young James Brown. And, of course, he has another name, Prince Angel. And everyone at the brunch was talking about Prince Angel and that they've taken him away from me, that he now belongs to the whole organization. So, Tony, I guess you did yourself well and really impressed the sisters at the brunch this time. How did it feel being the only male who is an officer in the National Congress of Black Women.
Well, it feels really, really good. Like you said, I'm so proud to have met you. We met at James Brown's funeral, and you came up to me and said, if there's anything that you could do to help support James Brown legacy or me, to let you know. And you've been my queen angel ever since. It's such an honor to be a part of it. I have six sisters, so I have to always do the right thing by women and, you know, help them and assist them in any way I can. So being a part of the National Congress and being the first male officer, it feels really good. And, you know, just to knowing that, you know, men, you know, hold a good place in women's heart, and it's not a negative one, you know.
Well, you know, there are some brothers who told me that we're going to have to change our name and move that National Congress of Black Women to National Congress for Black Women, and that way we can be more welcoming to the men. You know, we do appreciate the men in the organization. On yesterday, we honored a good brother, as we always do at our events, but looks like we've got a call to begin changing the name, since we do have good brothers who are joining. We have Mark Thompson, who's a really good friend. He purchased a life membership in memory of his mother. We have Steve Blakely out of the Prince William chapter, who is always there, just left my place a little while ago. You know, I called on him at the last minute to get the souvenir journal done. He was right there to do that. And we have other brothers who do the same thing. My nephew, for example, Ronald Troy Smith, he's always there to help whenever we have something for the National Congress. So even though we are called the National Congress of Black Women, we know that it takes the good brothers, too, to help us to be all that we can be, and we honor you. Wanda, it's good having you on the phone, too. You attended the brunch, and I just want you to know you and the starlets were the belle of the ball. You were the highlight of the program, and everybody's still talking about the great things that you did. So just tell our listeners a little bit about what you did. Wanda also is a chair of our Broward County, Florida chapter, but just talk to us, talk to our listeners about what you think about your performance yesterday and the response to it.
Wow. Well, first of all, let me say how honored we, all of the three of us, the three young ladies, two and myself, to have been invited to perform for our sisters and our guests. First of all, what we tried to do was honor you, Dr. Ife, by doing a tribute to our Black talented people. We did a Motown medley. Motown is the root of the history of music when I grew up. And I recognize the fact that our children are losing our history of our music. If you walk up to a very young child and say, hey, do you know who James Brown is? That child may not know who James Brown is, even Aretha Franklin, even the Supremes, the Temptations. And we can go back to Duke Ellington, Ray Charles, many of our great artists. We are not promoting ourselves. We are not holding on to our music history, which is so rich and so vital. And we have got to make a change. And that was one thing I wanted to state, because I work with children every day. I'm an educator. And I ask questions about music, and not only music, but political leaders. But the one thing, I can't target everything. But in my performance, I wanted to share with our sisterhood, with our guests, that we've got to make a change. We've got to grab onto our history, and we've got to embed the importance of what our founders did so that we can have a Jay-Z and a Beyonce. There's no way, if Diana Ross did not pave that way, that we would have a gorgeous Beyonce of today that has ownership of so many things. We can't let that history go, all that they've done to pave the way. Our kids got to know that.
Wonderful. You talk about our history. You notice that each of our events, we have a posthumous award. We try to do just what you're saying, is bring back the memory of someone who's played such an important role in our lives and in our history, so that our young people will not forget them. Yesterday, we honored Ethel Payne, who I would imagine, if you ask the average person who is under 50, they wouldn't know who Ethel Payne is, but she was called the first lady of black journalism. She did so much, opened up, you know, going to the White House and asking questions that were significant of presidents. And we can't forget that kind of thing, because wherever there was a first, we know that there were many others who perhaps wanted to do that, but until that first person made the breakthrough, it was not possible for others to do the many things that they do. And in terms of music, I mean, that's so true. And also, we honor Sojourner Truth, who was the woman who helped all women gain the right to vote. But again, many people wouldn't know her because she did that so many years ago before most of us were born. And that's no reason for us to forget about her. We really need to honor those who did something to make our lives better. And so last year, we honored two women who... As I was speaking at a high school for History Makers on Friday and asked young people about certain, you know, people in our history, they didn't know them. For instance, I mentioned Irene Morgan, who was honored at our luncheon last year. Irene Morgan was a woman who sat on a bus to gain rights for black people in interstate transportation long before Rosa Parks did, but most of them had never heard of her. It's not their fault. It's just that our schools don't always teach this history. I ask about other people, for instance, Henrietta Lacks, who did so much in the field of health care with her cells, that, and her work, her cells were so important that they are known in medical science today as HeLa cells. That's what much of the research is done on many illnesses. So it's important for us to go back, do the research, and bring them to the attention of those who are with us today. Now, the Starlets, tell us how they got started. I mean, because they certainly are doing a great service, and many of the people there just had not heard those wonderful songs for many, many years. But you heard the response. You heard the reaction when you came on. They could remember it once they heard it.
Well, my sister is one of the Starlets, and of course, I grew up singing with my sister. And the other member of the Starlet is a very good friend of ours, who is Maria Broomfield. And her family is rich in music. She was actually married to Eugene Wiles' brother, who is a phenomenal musician and singer. And we all grew up around each other singing. And it just so happens that I had stepped out of singing for quite a while. And when I came back in, it was all by chance. Someone asked me to sing for them, and it was like a whirlwind. Next thing I knew, I was singing in a doo-wop group, filling in for a man because they didn't have anyone. So, and it was an Italian group, all Italian guys, and they needed someone. And just out of the blue, this gentleman that I've known for a very short period of time, I just happened to sing a song, and he tracked me down and asked me would I please fill in and sing with his group till he could replace his singer, a male singer. And then he told me, you know, you really should have your own group. I just think you're so phenomenal. This is what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, he was right.
And I just had such a good time. And I was sitting with my cousin one day, and I said, you know, if I could get my sister to do it, and I could find Maria, who I hadn't seen in a very long time. I don't know if it had been 5 years or 2 years, but I hadn't seen Maria in a very long time. And after I left my cousin's house, a day or two later, I was with my sister, and I had told her that I really was thinking that if she wouldn't mind singing with me, and if we could find Maria, that we could give that a try. And I don't know if it was the next day or a couple of days later, we went to the gas station. My sister and I were together. We stopped at the gas station just for gas to get where we were going. And Maria was at the gas station. We hadn't seen her in 5 years, 2 years, how many, I don't know. But I couldn't believe it when someone said, hey, Wanda. I said, Dulcie, can you believe that's Maria? And as soon as, it's almost as if God brought it to be as soon as I spoke it. Believe it or not, right then at that moment, we planned a rehearsal to get together. And since that day, we've been rehearsing every Monday and Wednesday on a regular basis, unless we have, you know, something that stops us. But we've been nonstop ever since, well, and as happy as can be.
That's just really wonderful, because you were absolutely beautiful and sounded great. And I have the feeling you're going to be invited back to Washington, D.C. To perform not only for our event, but also invited to some of the other chapters to sing for them, because it was certainly beautiful. And just wondering, how did you and Tony Wilson then get together? What is the relationship there?
Well, actually, Tony Wilson came into my life as quite a celebrity. He came into town with a Broadway production. If it wasn't a Broadway production, it was brought to town with the same...
Black Heroes Hall of Fame.
It's called the Black Heroes Hall of Fame. But what happened, when a celebrity comes into town, sometimes the school system will contact the producers and ask them to please send some of the cast to different schools to share their stories and how they became successful with students. I was working at a school that targets talented children, and I was one of the music teachers. So my job was to host these guests to the school and, you know, just sit with them while they tell their stories and do little performances for the students. The students really got excited when they saw Tony Wilson do James Brown. They wanted more and more and more. And if you see Tony Wilson today, the way that he flips on the stage and spins and, you know, I tell him, boy, I can't see much of a change in the energy, you know, mm-hmm. from when he was younger. But he promised to come back and do Michael Jackson for the students. And therefore, he had to get my information so that he could contact me when he would be back. Mm-hmm. And that is how our friendship began. He came back and did everything he promised to do. And every time, you know, I would see him, he'd say, hey, what are your kids doing? You know, is there anything you need me to do? Just as he always seems to do with anybody he knows. Anything you need me to do, I'll be there. And one day I just said to him, well, we're having our first pep rally for FCAT, which is our state test. And I said, and I have to figure out something. He said, I'll be there.
Wonderful.
You know, and so it's just been a good friendship.
Wonderful. Well, I know, Tony, you worked well with our groups. You were the coordinator of music, as you have been for a few years in the National Congress of Black Women, as we put on our major brunch, or sometimes it's a luncheon. What is it that inspired? Well, first of all, did you notice that all of the talent yesterday was from the National Congress of Black Women?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, what inspired you, and I'm going to ask each of you that question, what inspired you to work with the National Congress of Black Women?
Well, what inspired me is, first of all, I have six black sisters, and I've always done, just like what Wanda said, a lot of different things for their events where they, you know, could be, not worried about the entertainment aspect of it, because whether it was me or whatever it was to customize the show, I would always be somebody that came through. Because on my business cards, I just had Just Do It, you know, and that came way before Nike, you know. Your grandmother used to say, just do it. So I just, you know, always wanted to be a person that's there, no whimpering, no complaining, just go ahead and do it and have fun and, you know, just, you know, fulfill it. Because it's one thing I hate to see is a woman frown, you know, on any level. So, you know, I would do it or make sure that it's done through, you know, me delegating it. So it just makes me feel good to go ahead and you know, fulfill some of those people who don't have the money or the way or the means, you know, to have entertainment, top-notch entertainment. So that, I just always felt that. Being a part of the National Congress of Black Women, and, you know, I stayed up. I didn't even sleep at all Saturday. I was in the hallway just waiting because I knew some of the members came in at 2 in the morning from going out. So, because I knew if I went to sleep, I wouldn't have got up. And so I stayed up with all of the ladies at 5 o'clock in the morning with stuff in all of the gift bags and restuffing some of all of the programs. So I got to meet Judy and, of course, a lot of the other ladies. And, you know, I just love being there for women when I can be, you know.
You know, Tony, I am not even going to feel sorry for you staying up all night, because you told me when you came, you didn't come to Washington to sleep.
No, I didn't. That's why I called.
Definitely didn't.
I had to call your room at 4 o'clock in the morning and ask you at some program. Like, what? But I did. However, I did put together the National Congress of Black Women Worldwide Facebook so that all of the chapters, if they wanted to, could share things that happened in their cities so that other people can just see what they do and they can just communicate between the 70 chapters. And I'm going to also put together National Congress of Black Women or for Black Women Worldwide YouTube so we could share the video clips of all of the different chapters that they're having a function. You know, because it's really nice to know what's going on all around. And I'm going to London the last week in October, and I'm going to put together the first National Congress of Black Women UK.
You hear that enthusiasm? So let's go to Wanda for a moment. Wanda, the same question for you. What inspired you to work with the National Congress of Black Women?
Well, I talked to Tony about the organization. He was always talking about his Queen Angel. His Queen Angel, his Queen Angel. And I was like, this must be the most phenomenal woman in the world. This man never stopped. And so he said, did you go on the site yet? Did you see what the National Congress of Black Women are doing? And I finally did. And it was so much there. And I was like, oh, my God. Tony actually knows what he's talking about. You know, and as I feel in my heart, you know, there are people that always want to do something to help, but they don't know what to do. They don't know the first step to take to get involved. I even know people who say, you know, I wouldn't mind helping the president campaign for the election, but I don't know what to do. I vote Democrat, but I don't know how to find the Democrats, you know, to become an active member, you know. So there are people that actually want to do stuff. And what I was most impressed with this organization, that's what it's not about having a degree. It's not about being the smartest person in the room. It's about being a person that wants to make a difference.
All right.
You know, it's about being a woman that wants to give some of her time, some of her energy, some of her knowledge and her willingness to make the world a better place and to something good for women, for women's causes. And it was just so much there that I felt connected immediately.
Well, I know that you made a big hit, as I said, at the brunch, and I hope that you will continue to work and to serve in your community, as I know you will. Both you, Tony, and you, Wanda, but I want you to let our listeners know how they can reach you. Wanda is chair of the Broward County chapter of the National Congress of Black Women, and Tony is the first vice chair of the Broward County chapter. So if there are listeners from Broward County, would you please tell our listeners how they can reach you, how they can join your chapter, how they can donate to your chapter, or whatever?
Well, our address and phone number here, we're at 809 Northwest 13th Avenue. It's our mailing address, 809 Northwest 13th Avenue, Dania Beach, Florida, 33004. Our phone number is 561-305-8821. And, of course, you can go to the National Congress of BW.org. I'm sorry, National Congress BW.org. And you can always sign on to the National Congress of Black Women to become a member. And so that would be something really wonderful to see everything that we've done with Sojourner Truth.
And, of course, on that same website, the National Congress, BW.org, you can join the National Congress of Black Women to the National Chapter. I want to thank you, Tony, and thank you, Wanda, for being with us today and giving us a little summary of what we just witnessed, because it was indeed phenomenal. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you again soon, as I know that you will be having celebrations regarding your charter, etc., in Broward County. So we look forward to being with you soon. And thank you so much again for being with us.
It's always a pleasure.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. To our listeners, we are here every Monday, 6 p.m. And if you missed any of our shows, just go to www.artistfirst.com. Click on Celebrating Truth, and that will take you to a page where you can hear our archived shows as far back as we have been on the air. We in the National Congress of Black Women just completed our annual awards brunch in Washington, D.C. at the Capitol Hilton Hotel, and we want you to continue looking at our website because fairly soon we'll be posting the date of our next national event. That will be our 28th annual awards luncheon. We had a great time there. Our leaders and our members from all over the country came, and we were so excited to see each other because, indeed, we are an organization that makes a difference. And we actually love working together in this organization. So plan now to be with us next year when we will again meet in Washington, D.C., the Sunday morning following the Congressional Black Caucus. Take a look at our website all through the year because we have a lot of great information there about big events that are going on in the National Congress of Black Women across the country. Check out our website. That's www.nationalcongressbw.org, nationalcongressbw.org, or call us at 202-678-6788 for more information. That's 202-678-6788 for more information. We have a lot of great information on our website, and we want you to take a look at some of our projects, like College for Kids and Young Ambassadors, also College for Teens. Read some of our weekly news articles, as well as firsthand information from the White House. We try to keep it current so that you know what's going on in Washington, D.C. It's not all bad, as you hear in the news. We have a lot of wonderful, positive things going on in Washington, D.C., and around the country, wherever there is a chapter of the National Congress of Black Women. Again, we thank our listeners and our guests for spending this time with us on Celebrating Truth. Celebrating Truth is brought to you by the National Congress of Black Women, and we invite our listeners to join us as members or as donors. Again, that's by calling 202-678-6788, or you may join or donate to our community service programs at www.nationalcongressbw.org. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at C, that's the letter ABC, C Truth Producer, and join us on Facebook. Go to facebook.com, type in Celebrating Truth, and you'll find us there. Remember to check out the National Congress of Black Women and the great work we do around the country on our website frequently at www.nationalcongressbw.org. Listen also to our Urban Radio 2000 station while you're on our website. We have wonderful music, all kinds, classical music, gospel music, blues, anything you want to hear on Urban Radio 2000. If there's no chapter in your town, just call us at 202-678-6788, and we will be happy to tell you how you can get started. That's it for Celebrating Truth today. We'll see you next week. Invite your friends to join us every Monday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time at artistfirst.com. Have a blessed week.